Hi, my name is Christy Walters, and I, along with my friend Jeff Bajorek, host the Why and the Buy podcast on the Sell or Die Network. It's August, and for us, that means our show is all about mindset. We have got some killer guests coming up, like Tom Singer, Tracy Thorson, and even the Sell or Die man himself, Jeffrey Gittimer. We have something for everyone here on the Why and the Buy podcast, so definitely check out our Monday musings and monthly book clubs as well. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search The Why and The Buy. And remember, when you know your whys, your hows and your whats get much better.
And I said, well, what's your pitch? And he said, my pitch is let the man have his guitar. And I said, what do you mean by that? He says, look, we hired you because of the stuff you do and the way you do it. We wouldn't hire Bruce Springsteen to come right and perform and say, by the way, you got to sing a cappella.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sell or Die, the nation's number one, maybe the universe's number one, sales and personal development podcast. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. What's up, everybody?
And boy, do we have a show for you today.
That's right. Coming up.
The great Chester Elton, who's a really good friend of mine for a long, long time, will be here today. And he's going to talk about workplace productivity and the human resource that goes into that process. He's very insightful. You guys are going to get a hell of a lot out of this, whether you have a corporate team or a sales team. And I would challenge you that you need to stay tuned.
But before we get into Chester, we have an amazing 5-star review from Sarah Cheer. She writes,
Sarah Cheer?
Yeah. Jeffrey and Jen, you are truly amazing.
That's correct, Sarah. And you are an amazing judge.
I'm 22, a recent grad from Florida State, and just started my career in sales after moving to North Carolina. Mm. I'm currently a lead generator for my company, and I'm using your advice to earn my promotion as a sales rep. Using your tips, I was able to generate a huge amount of sales for my company in my first month of employment. Go, Sarah, go! I'm so motivated and will update you on my progress.
All right.
Love it. I love reading your 5-star reviews. So thank you guys for putting them out there. And remember, every 5-star review you give us on iTunes will help us help you. It'll help us get you better guests to listen to on the show, get you the best guests to listen to on the show. So give us a 5-star review and we'll read it on our show.
Jen, Jeffrey, do you have a specific piece of advice for someone who is in Sarah's position, a lead generator right out of college looking to get that promotion? What should they do?
If you're a lead generator, if you're on the phone trying to get leads for your sales team, the best thing you can do is repeat what worked. Get to work a half an hour early, stay at work a half an hour late, and make more dials and more phone calls than anybody else on the planet, and you'll finally start to get comfortable and familiar with your own personality and your capability, and you will learn what it takes to connect. I can tell you from personal experience making cold calls when I was in my 20s, and I made tons of them, I would try to connect in the most emotional way possible. And when I connected emotionally, sometimes it had to do geographically with where are you from or what are you doing, or I hear kids in the background, how old are they? Because at the time, the twins were just born in 1972. So I would try emotionally to connect with that person and get them to listen to me. Because when you're trying to generate a lead, the worst thing that happens to you is people swear and hang up. And you have to get used to that.
Okay, I want to add one more thing to that. I love that, Jeffrey. Sarah, or any of you diehards who want that promotion, go in tomorrow and talk to your boss and let them know that you're going to work your ass off. And obviously, you have to work your ass off.
Yep.
Let them know that you're not just going to meet quota, but that you're going to beat quota. And ask them what it's going to take for you to get the promotion. Have that conversation with them and tell them, look, I'm going to do my very best at this job. I'm going to become the best lead generator or whatever it is that your position is. But this is my goal. In the next 6 to 12 months, I want to be in XYZ position, whatever that position is, and help and formulate a plan with your boss to get there. Because if they don't even know you want a promotion, they probably might not be thinking about it. So get them tied into your goal.
I'm going to tell you one more thing. What Jennifer is talking to you about, I just recorded this morning my reading of the Napoleon Hill book, Truthful Living, and that was Napoleon Hill's strategy for increasing your salary 100 years ago. Chapter 12.
I love it.
Go for it.
Cool. All right, so coming
up. Isn't it amazing how little new there is? Or like we went back and found this book in Truthful Living, the original writings of Napoleon Hill, uncovered these things, and these self-evident truths are in there, and they're amazing.
Yeah. Hill is an unbelievable author who I think is even more true to his word today than he was 100 years ago than when he wrote it. Now, I hadn't read that book when I was new to sales because it was just discovered. But the strategy I just offered is something that I personally did and allowed me to gain 5 or 6 promotions within a 5-year span.
Yeah. So what Hill basically said is don't just do it. Tell people you're going to do it and then get it done. And you'll realize it much faster and people will recognize it.
I like it. All right. So our guest today.
Oh,
yes.
I love Chester Elton.
I know. It's Chester Elton. He's the co-author of The Best Team Wins, The New Science of High Performance.
Right.
And here's the deal.
Adrian Bostic, by the way, is the other author. Mm. Both guys are amazing.
Yeah.
I will tell you that Chester is not only bald, but he is beautiful. and as a Northeasterner, we recognize one another very easily by our attitudes.
Oh, I thought you were going to say by your baldness.
No.
Okay. So
that would be boldness, please.
So let me tell you a little bit about Chester. He's an expert in developing positive and productive workplace cultures. And we discuss a variety of topics, including the eternal question. You ready for this one? Can an old—
What does woman want?
I can tell you the answer to that one. Can an old sales manager learn new tricks?
Ooh.
Also, you're going to find out why Chester believes the customer experience will never exceed the employee experience.
Keep in mind that Chester has written many books on workplace culture, including his benchmark book, The Carrot Principle. And he is known by every Bugs Bunny in this world that you dangle the carrot in order to be able to get the result. Please help me welcome the great Chester Elton. My longtime friend, the great Chester Elton, is the co-founder of The Culture Works, a global training company, and the co-author of award-winning and, get this, New York Times, USA Today, and Wall Street Journal best-selling leadership books. All in, The Carrot Principle, and his new book, The Best Team Wins. It's all about the Philadelphia Eagles. The new science of high performance. Welcome, Chester, you Canadian person, you.
Delighted to be with you. Always a pleasure to talk with you, Jeff.
Do you have a dual passport?
I do, actually. I have two passports, and my grandfather was English, so I could get an English passport. And I think when you get 3 passports, you're this close to being Jason Bourne.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, man.
I think, though, that you're Jason Bourne again.
Also true.
Yeah, but this is the challenge that you have. When you go into a culture group, you have to analyze what's right with the culture and what's wrong with the culture before you can say a word, correct?
Absolutely.
And when you figure out what it is, how many people are pissed off that you have figured out what their ruse is, or they're sitting in a corner hibernating someplace and they don't really want to join the party? What do you do with those people?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. People come up to me all the time and say, hey, we've got this really toxic culture. You should come do some work with us. And I said, you know what? You're never going to call me because your culture is toxic, you don't care about culture. So oddly enough, most of the places we work are pretty good cultures to begin with. And so when it comes to pointing out the two or three things where they need some adjustment, they're actually pretty open to the coaching. So I don't have too many of those come to Jesus meetings or, hey, you know, wake up, I'm talking to you kind of conversations.
Are there two or three things that you see happening with teams most often in terms of needing adjustment?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting to me that so often it comes down to clear communication. You know, we found the difference between sort of good team leaders and the exceptional is that they really knew how to communicate on a one-on-one level. We talk about engagement as a one-on-one process. You know, old school was kind of like we treat everybody the same because that's fair. New school is everybody in my team is going to have some nuances, and the best team leaders take the time to understand those nuances and how to communicate effectively, especially with a multi-generational and multicultural organization, which is most organizations these days. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Do you take the weak players and get rid of them?
You know, yes, I think you have to, you know, through the conversation, we take people through a whole process, or if I'm a Canadian, it was the process.
right. You stop saying process?
Well, I lived in Jersey for 25 years now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got you. I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what a deli is?
Yeah, and a diner.
Exactly. A diner. Yeah.
So this is the book we're talking about today. I want to make sure. But you have to understand that it comes with Chester and
really
Avery doing
cool
their
packaging.
You know, the packaging is wonderful. It comes with orange highlighters. Come on. Uh-huh. It has the touch.
Oh,
don't
yeah.
Think
it's
we don't
well
notice
thought
these
out.
Things.
It's well thought out.
And I think that it's just very well done. Just very well done. That's all I'm saying.
Now, I'm going to tell you a quick story about those orange pens. You won't even remember this. Years and years ago when we were promoting the Carrot Principle, we came down and spent a day with you to learn from you.
Yep.
And we signed a contract, and you signed the contract with an orange Sharpie.
Oh, yeah.
And ever since that day, I have never signed anything that I don't bring an orange Sharpie with me. That's a Jeffrey Gittimer tip.
That's cool.
Cool. I love that.
It's a pleasure to do that. I love that. Unfortunately, this pen doesn't write orange, but the other thing does.
If you pull off the other cap, it's an orange highlighter.
Yeah. That's the first thing I did. Yeah. I pulled off the cap that I could see. It's phenomenal. It's very, very, very well done. I will highlight your book and send you a couple of the pages that I think are the most germane, and you can sneak them into your talk. But come on, look at his bookmark.
They're little carrots.
Come on. Now,
they're awesome.
When you say the best team wins, what are the cultural things that you're talking about that revolve around the word best?
Yeah, well, we found five disciplines that, you know, were really germane to the modern day team. It seems like everything you learned about teams over the last 5 or 10 years, you kind of have to rethink. And number one is kind of what we've been talking about, is this multi-generational, multicultural workplace, that you've really got to understand those nuances, and you've got to take the time to really understand each of the players, which is the next discipline, which was managed to one. It's really interesting. That really came to fore. I was presenting in Birmingham, England for Tesco, you know, the big grocery store chain there. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest presentations I've ever made, it was to 9,000 of their managers in a big arena in Birmingham. And they were coaching me up like crazy and said, well, you can't do this and you can't do this and you can't do this and you can't do this. And after a while, I said, you know, I should just give you the slides. At this point, you can do it.
Yeah.
Because all the fun stuff we do, you know, with our carrots and frisbees and interaction, that they were going to take away because they didn't want me to come off the stage. Well, Carl, the producer. So I brought all the stuff anyway, you know, as you would do, Jeffrey.
Of course.
Right? Yeah.
I get what you're saying. I'm going to do it anyway, right?
Yeah, thanks for the advice. Goodbye.
So I'm talking to Carl, and I said, hey, you know, they don't want me to do this, don't want me to do that. And he said, don't worry, I got your back. I do everything you want to do. And I said, well, what's your pitch? And he said, my pitch is let the man have his guitar. And I said, what do you mean by that? He says, look, we hired you because of the stuff you do and the way you do it. We wouldn't hire Bruce Springsteen to come and perform and say, by the way, you got to sing a cappella.
Everyone needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You need sales help. It doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. If your sales need help, it's time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn new advanced strategies to close your next deal. We've got hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting. It's like Jeffrey sitting there right next to you, helping you close your next deal. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge that you can actually use. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com and sign up for a free demo. Did I mention it's free? Free demo. I like free.
There's some lines that you can't cross no matter what in today's world.
Oh, without question.
But you've always been a clean guy. I'm on the edge. Let's just say that. And I get reprimanded all
the time. So you have to be careful, Jeffrey.
Right. I do have to be careful.
Yeah, that's a bigger problem for you than it has ever been for me. No question.
Okay, keep going.
Okay, so I want to go back to something you said about treating multi-generational, multicultural people differently based on their needs. How do you treat them differently without making one of the groups feel like you're treating the other group special and, you know, feeling upset about it, so to speak?
Yeah, absolute transparency. I mean, you just tell people. You know, we developed one of the books we self-published actually for our training companies called What Motivates Me. And you actually have an online assessment that we actually spent a lot of time and treasure on to get it right around what are your key motivators at work. And one of the best team exercises we have and was actually the foundation for a lot of information that we used our research information for the new book was, do we understand each other's motivators? Do we understand what we have in common? Do we understand what's unique? And do we understand where we have disconnects or areas of caution? And when you bring a team together and you just talk about it, you talk about the fact that you are going to be treated differently. There's going to be, you know, time changes. There's going to be cultural changes. There's going to be language variances. And as long as everybody understands that, you don't have those jealousies or you don't have people feeling like they're left out. I think that radical transparency is another discipline for really, really good teams. And once the team buys into that, it's good. Back to our previous conversation, if you've got team members that can't buy into that, then it's time for them to join another team.
They might be on the wrong team.
Is it radical transparency from HR down? Or is it radical transparency all over the place from HR up?
You know, I think it's all over the place. Clearly, there are times when you can't be radically transparent. There's legal, you know, things. You're involved in mergers or acquisitions, and there's just certain things you can't share. Other than that, I would say, look, and we do it with our teams all the time. You know, we lay out all the financials. We lay out all the customers. We lay out all the product development. We want everybody's head in the game. You know, I was able to spend a half a day with Alan Mulally, you know, the guy who saved Ford Motor Company. Mm-hmm. Another great book, you know, American Icon, that was written by a reporter from the Detroit Free Press. The way he turned that culture around was he brought everybody in and everybody knew what was going on. And I think in today's world where information is so easily accessible anyway, I mean, you know, just ask Facebook. Right.
Right. Or Mother Google.
Yeah, Mother Google. I mean, people are going to find out anyway. They might as well find out from you in an environment where you can get people's heads in the game and be really engaged for the betterment of the team and the customer and the business. So I think that's the key.
And how do you change a manager who's been doing this for 20 years? Now, all of a sudden, his team makeup is different. His people are different. They need different things. But how do you change his ways of managing or her ways of managing?
Well, you know, sometimes you can't. And that's the hard truth, right? What we do is we go through these team exercises, particularly around the motivators. We did a great case study with Wendy's where we took the team leader and her 8 direct reports and went through that exercise. And it was really revealing the generational gap. You know, she'd been in the business, to your point, 25 years. Mm-hmm. Learning wasn't a big thing for her. She'd seen it all. And she loved pressure. Give me the impossible and no time to do it. Well, almost all her direct reports were millennials, where we found that learning and impact are really high motivators. So, you know, she was able to change and say, look, we're going to change our meetings. We're going to start sharing best practices. We're going to bring in vendors. We're going to have more of an educational bent. Now, it wasn't hard for her in this situation because developing others was a high motivator for her. If that's not there, if you're the kind of leader that wants to keep all the information close, because that's where you see power, and you've got a lot of people that want to learn, grow, and develop, well, sometimes you can't make that turn. Often, however, we found that when you're transparent like that and you become a little vulnerable to your team, here's what's important to me, here's what's important to you, let's find some common ground, you often can make those little changes that make a big difference. And that's another thing we discovered is it's the little things that make a big difference. And Jeffrey, you know this better than anybody in sales. You know, the big things everybody does, you mm-hmm. got to do that. It's the little things that you do, you know, signing with the orange Sharpie, right? It's the little things that differentiate, that set you apart. And once you get that going on your team, your odds of winning go way up.
I you started mentioning the five principles in the book, and I'd like you to at least list them so that people can have the incentive to go out and buy it.
Sure. Well, the first one was the generational differences. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. Manage to the one, also key. The third one we call speed to productivity, and that's how you onboard people. You know, particularly with the mobile generation and the mobile workforce we've got, really key. You know, our parents, you know, stayed in their jobs 15 years plus. Baby boomers tended to be, you know, 7 to 9 to 10 years. Gen X is around 5 to 6. Millennials, it's like 1.5 to 2. So you've got a very mobile workforce. This idea of hiring better, getting people on board and ramping them up becomes really key.
Yeah, but speed to productivity is your own phrase, and it's wonderful.
I like it.
Yeah, thanks. And number four for us was the innovative environment. Challenge everything. And this comes back to a lot of things we've talked about. Do you have a leader that's willing to open up and be open to suggestions? Google did a great study, you know, 180 teams over 5 years, called the Aristotle study. And it was really interesting. They wanted to find out what were the characteristics of the most innovative teams. Number one was psychological safety. And I'll tell you, Jeffrey, it was hilarious. I was listening to the interview on NPR. I'm driving around, and the interviewer asks the researcher, can you sum up emotional safety just in a few words? And he goes, yeah. Be nice.
Yeah.
Be nice to each other.
Well, you know, that's part of Google's whole thing. You know,
do no wrong or something.
Yeah, don't be mean or something like that.
Yeah.
They haven't followed that 100% of the way.
No, they've had pockets where they need to revisit that, right?
Yeah, the pockets, I think, that have all the money in them. Not really sure.
Well, here's the idea that I love, and it's challenge the idea, not the person. Right. So we can debate and have heated debates around ideas, but don't get personal. And, you know, one of our favorite executives, Scott O'Neill, who runs the Sixers, one of his core values is that we cheer for each other. Now, he creates remarkable teams very quickly. We actually highlighted the Sixers. I love your jersey. We highlighted them in the book that previous to this breakout year this year, they were breaking every NBA record for season ticket holder sales, even though they had one of the worst losing percentages, not just in the NBA, but in professional sports, period.
Mm-hmm.
How did they do it? They rallied their team around, they cheer for each other. And it's interesting. Scott says, look, I want lots of debate. Once it gets personal, the way he lightens the mood, he goes, hey, Jeffrey, I don't think you're cheering for me on this one.
Yeah, exactly. So Jennifer runs our team meeting and has created the culture, or recreated the culture inside of our company. And we always do an icebreaker, and we always end with an inspirational quote. Why don't you talk about what our team meetings have evolved to?
I love that idea, Jennifer. That's a great idea.
Thank you. We needed to find more ways to communicate and get on the same page consistently, and so that we could better collaborate, because a lot of the work was being done in silos. And so now we have a weekly team meeting. Sounds like it's not like this major, you know, idea here, right? It's back to fundamentals of let's actually meet. But we hold those meetings consistently every single week. And Jeffrey and I take them very seriously, that our attendance needs to be there, and that is just as important as a customer meeting. Because if we can't get the team involved and on the same page in the back end, then, you know, we're going to be in trouble with our customers anyway.
And so everybody needs to know what's going on in the other guy's desk.
Yeah, so everyone has about 5 minutes to talk about what they're doing and what they're focusing on this week, any big accomplishments from the week before. And it's a pretty positive, fun meeting.
Yeah. We're also financially transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is more and more important, you know, to understand if we do this, this is how it's going to impact us. Here's the money we have to invest.
Yeah. You know, it's much easier to do when you don't have any money. It's a shorter meeting.
But, you know, Jennifer, we came across a phrase that I think you'll really like. And we say it this way, that the customer experience will never exceed the employee experience.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing in your team meeting is you're letting people have their voice. You're making them feel valued. They're engaged. And they can take that engagement and that energy and translate it to their customers. So I love that best practice. Good for you.
I think I'm writing a book called From Shit to Great because you're not that good. And one of the reasons that it irked me is that when I delved into Good to Great, which many people have taken as the opus, the new, you know, Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, he leaves out treat your employees better than you treat your customers.
Yeah.
And if you don't do that, I think you lose.
I think you're exactly right. And you know what? It transcends every industry. A good friend of mine, Britt Barrett, who was the CEO of two big hospitals in Dallas. He now teaches at the University of Texas. He wrote a book called The Patient Comes Second.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine this is a, you know, administrator of a hospital saying your employees absolutely come first. And when the employees come first and you've got longer tenure and longer engagement, guess what happens? Care is better. Health is better.
Yep. Everything's better.
Culture's better. Attitude's better. Happiness is better.
Recruitment's better. Yeah.
No question. And it's interesting because our fifth discipline, which is the last one on the list, is don't forget the customer. You know, we're doing all these four things about, you know, speed to productivity and managing to the one and being innovative and, you know, multi-generational culture so that we can deliver an incredible experience to the customer. If that last one's not there, then I don't know why you're doing it, right?
I experienced a very big bank merger here in Charlotte when First Union merged with Wachovia.
Oh, wow, yeah.
More than a decade ago. And the banks hated each other, and the bankers hated each other. And there's 6,000 people in Charlotte guarding their desks because they didn't know who was going to stay and who was going to go. I called my banker over at First Citizens, and I said, listen, everyone's guarding their desks over there. No one's guarding their customers.
Wow.
And his expression to me back was, please don't tell them.
I love that. So yeah. I want to go to your, I think it was your third principle, the one about speed to productivity. Because in sales, a lot of sales managers struggle with this too, right? You're thinking about, okay, I'm going to hire this new salesperson and they need to make quota within X number of days. How do I get them ramped up or onboarded or whatever word you want to use for it? Very, very quickly. Are there tips that you have or strategies that you have that gets an employee ramped up more quickly?
Oh, absolutely. Some great best practices. And some of them aren't that new, just good reminders. You know, let the team be a part of the interview process, you know, so that they know who's coming on board, so that they've immediately got some connections on the team. We did some nice work with Danaher. It's probably the greatest company you haven't heard of. You know, they do a lot of manufacturing and so on. And multinational global company. What they do is on your first day in, your manager says, look, here are five people in the organization you need to get to know. Now, they're not in our department, and they're expecting you. There's a guy in finance. There may be a guy in sales. There's a guy in R&D. There's a person in HR. There's a person in, you know, executive development. And they're required those first 5 days to spend at least a half a day with each one of those people to break down the barriers and get to know how you get things done. I think one of the toughest things for new employees, whether it's in sales or anything else, is when I've got a project or I've completed a sale or whatever it is I'm doing, how do that I then get it to market? How do I get it contracted? How do I get it done? Well, if you've got a contact in finance, if you've got a person in accounts receivable, right from the get-go, and they're eager to help you get that done, speed of productivity goes way up. Another best practice is you assign a mentor day one. you know, I'm going to be your best friend for the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. I'm going to help you, you know, find the best way to get to work. I'm going to tell you where the cafeteria is. I'm going to tell you, you know, how the culture works, so that if you're not comfortable going to your boss necessarily with what you may think is a stupid question, you've always got somebody on your team that doesn't mind because they ask those stupid questions when they were new to.
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like?
I'm going to throw an idea at you that's pissed me off for the last at least half a century.
Okay.
Salespeople and sales managers, specifically sales managers, they want their sales guy to ramp up faster than anybody to start making money. So they tend to say, work with Bob because Bob's been here for 10 years and he knows the ropes. Meanwhile, Bob drinks a little bit too much, is thinking about quitting, doesn't like the boss, and has his job resume posted up on Monster under an assumed name.
Right.
And he gets in the car with Bob the first day, and Bob turns around to the kid and says, let me tell you how things really work around here. And that's because the manager didn't pay Bob to help this kid. If you want somebody to be a mentor, don't assume they're going to stop their own productivity for some youngster who may not appreciate it. Pay the guy.
Oh, yeah.
And pay him handsomely.
Yeah, no, I think all those incentives and the way you line that up is key as well. And that's all part of it comes back to culture. Right?
Yeah, but if you're going to say hire a mentor, pay the frickin' mentor.
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, those financial, particularly in sales where financial incentives are big, right?
Yeah.
Some kind of a, that may not work in every department, but again, know your people, know your culture, know how to make it prestigious. You know, it's an honor to be asked to be a mentor. Does it build up your resume? Does it help you down the career path? You know, one of the things that we found that was a real eye-opener for me is the number one reason people are leaving jobs today is no clear career path. I don't know where I'm going. And again, back to Google, they said, look, I don't want to be micromanaged in my job, but I absolutely want to be micromanaged in my career. Where am I going to be 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years down the road?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a mentorship in that can really help. Again, you know, we call them aspirational conversations that you have with your people. Forget the year-end evaluation. It doesn't mean anything to anybody anymore. If I'm checking in with you on a regular basis and at least monthly, I think, and we're having these casual conversations, but I'm listening very carefully as to where you want to be 2 to 3 years from now. What projects do you want to be involved in? You know, what can we do to help you grow and develop? Your odds of keeping your really good people go way up, and you're identifying people that just aren't that, they just don't care
exactly.
That much.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's good to know too.
I try to help other speakers. I met with it. Because I was helped as a speaker, if someone asks me to have a lunch or something, I'll do it. Typically, I charge for it, but for other speakers, I kind of don't. So I'm sitting down several years ago with a speaker, and he says, where's the money in speaking? And I said, well, I don't think I can give you that answer, because for me, I just found out what I loved to do, and I focused on that, and that's what has led me to more than money. It's led me to wealth. And he said, yeah, but where's the money?
He doesn't get it. Yeah.
No.
It seems like there's this big concern for employees to know about the money. So, for example, we just interviewed John Lee Dumas, who puts online, actually, how much revenue he's bringing in every month. And you talked about the need for transparency to tell your employees, you know, financials and stuff like that. Why do you think that's become so important and something that is working in terms of retention?
Well, more and more what we're seeing is people want to know they're having an impact. you know, that they're making a difference. And if I know that what I'm doing today is going to impact the financials, it's going to impact, you know, the health of the company, that's a high engager for me. I can connect the dots. You know, old school was kind of just do your job, I'll worry about the big picture. Well, the more people understand about the big picture and can really come back to, if I do this, it means that financially. Those are huge incentives.
So the old school is just do your job, but the new school is here's what your job means to the overall success of the company.
Exactly.
Do you think that there is a struggle, though, for the person who's making, I don't know, $4,000 a month, but sees the company bringing in a couple hundred thousand a month?
You know, as long as you're radically transparent and that person knows that they can go from $4,000 a month to $50,000 a month, I don't think it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're right there. There definitely is a money focus in today's world because there's, you know, real estate's higher, cost of living is higher.
Oh, sure.
And especially if you live in New Jersey. Where do you live?
I live in New Jersey. It's funny. I was talking to our financial guy. He said, where should you retire? He says, you know, the places with no taxes, you know, Texas and Florida and so on. I said, where do you not want to have places? He goes, New York, New Jersey, and California. I said, well, my primary residence is in New York. We just bought a lake house up in the Adirondacks in upstate New York, and we have a little place in the desert in Palm Springs. We picked the trifecta.
Right.
Oh, man. It's nice upstate, though. It's real nice up there.
It's gorgeous. I want to get back to a comment that you made, Jeffrey, about where's the money in speaking? Because, you know, this happens to you and it happens to me. I was doing this thing for American Express, and it was the third shift, and this young kid, great kid, comes up and he goes, hey, I want to do what you do. And I asked him, what do you think it is I do? And he says, you just tell great stories and you inspire people.
Yeah, right. That's all you got to do.
That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
I said, no, that's not what I do. I said, I have over, you know, 35 years have become, you know, world-class, an expert in culture and in engaging employees. And so then I get to speak about that. So I said, what do you do here? And he goes, I run the third shift for the call center. I said, great. Be the world's greatest leader of third shift call centers. And then people are going to want to know, how did you do that? And you get to speak on that.
People will ask me, should I quit my job? And I tell them, sure. Become the best salesperson on the team, then quit.
Yeah, exactly.
And that way your manager can't throw you under a bus. Because
exactly.
He's going to say you're a piece of crap, you know.
No matter what.
Yeah. And I'll tell you the other tip that I picked up from you, and we did pay you for this. It was the day I spent with him, is in presenting, you said, you know, you can't present to 9,000 people. You present to 9,000 individuals.
Yeah.
So make sure that while you're presenting, you make eye contact and hold it.
Mm-hmm.
And tell a bit of the story to that one person. And I've never forgotten that. And boy, does it make a difference. I just guest lectured up at Cornell Monday night for their master's program. And it was so much fun because, you know, about 30 students. And you start to make eye contact and you start to tell the story to that one person.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody gets on their phone.
Everyone's so engaged. Yeah.
I've talked to a couple of college kids' classes and it's phenomenal to me how to hold their attention.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look at them.
Yep.
Because when you look at one person, the other guy's afraid maybe he's going to look at me next. And I better not be, you know what I mean?
I better be paying attention.
But, no, the whole thing where you present to the back of the room or you present to the clock, I mean, that's...
Yeah, that doesn't work.
No. Yeah. Well, this is death by timing.
This has been awesome.
Yeah. You're actually good.
No, you're real good.
Yeah,
and everyone should go out and get a copy of your book, The Best Team Wins.
Yep. And this is not about sports, by the way. This is about companies that are looking to build their foundation with great people in order to make great profits. It doesn't start out with profit. It starts out with people.
Yeah, and you know, just in closing, my favorite stat that we came across, because you know we're research based. That book was 850,000 engagement surveys and 50,000 of our motivators assessment.
Wow.
My favorite stat though that we got, it was from a research that was done at University of California, is that if you're happy and engaged at work, you're 150% more likely to be happy and engaged in your personal life. And you know, Jeffrey, you've preached that for years. You know, do what you love. And you'll be great at it.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody has work-life balance. I remember you telling me that too. You're always going to be out of balance if you're going to be great. I do think, though, that you can have work-life harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And when you happy at work, you can have harmony in your personal life. And that's what we really strive to do. Let's create these great teams and these great places to work so that you go home happy and you're happy with your family and life overall just gets better.
So you're taking the expression happy wife, happy life to another level that says happy job, happy wife.
Correct? Exactly. Especially if you're making a lot of money, I find that goes a long way to keeping your wife happy as well.
Now, sometimes, though, the wife is making more than the husband in today's world.
With any kind of luck, that's the best of all worlds, right?
So it's happy, wealthy wife and husband struggling to keep up.
Oh, please.
You know, my dad, he passed away about 10 years ago, but our oldest child is our only daughter, Cassandra. And she was there with Grandpa, and she says, Grandpa, do you have any advice for me about getting married? He goes, yeah. Marry a really, really rich old man with a bad cough.
That's a classic. So we are looking forward to doing this again. Maybe we'll have both you guys on. Do you talk to each other?
We do. We get along really quite well.
Good. So maybe we'll have both of you on and we'll orange ourselves out of this thing, because I would really like to talk about the culture on a sales team as our next talk, because we have a lot. We're very blessed now. We're at about 60,000 downloads a month. When we get to 100,000, we'll bring you on for the culture of a sales team, because you actually hit the nail on the head before you were talking about the vertical team, not the horizontal team. Salespeople do not want to be on a team. They want the guy next to them to die so they can have his leads. But there has to be an inside service person and a mm-hmm. financial person and a truck driver and a warehouse guy. That's what makes the team. And yep. I'd like you to speak to that as well.
Well, you know, if we've got time, I got one quick little story for you. We got a minute?
Yeah.
We were looking at all kinds of teams, and we actually start the book off with the story of a guy named Chris Hadfield. Now, if you're Canadian, you know exactly who he is. Mm-hmm. He's the commander of the International Space Station and a good Canadian. I know a lot of people say Canada has astronauts. Yes, we've had three, okay, so back off.
Right. They only went to New Jersey. But
they didn't actually get the space. Anyway, so here he is, the commander of the International Space Station for 6 months, and he had a multi-generational, multicultural team, three cosmonauts, two American astronauts, and himself. And they trained for over 10 years before they go up. And he said it was really interesting. We exceeded every goal we set in the 6 months we were there. And it was because, no question, we did the big things. We were smart. We were technically proficient. I mean, they're astronauts. They're the smartest guys on the planet, right? He says, I'm convinced, though, that the difference between us being, you know, meeting our goals and exceeding every goal was we had one unwritten rule. And I think this applies to sales teams, to any kind of team. And it was this, that every astronaut had to perform one random act of kindness for every other astronaut every day. And it was never a big thing. You know, it was, let me clean up, I'll help you with the calculations, I'll cook dinner tonight, or whatever it is. And he said the message was very clear in our team that these random acts of kindness, it was that you're on my team, I got your back, I'm cheering for you, I care about you, I love you. And he said the impact of that was we never had heated arguments, we never had hurt feelings. It was all about the job, it was all about the team every day. And we exceeded every goal. And I just think that's a great metaphor for teams and for families and for life. These little random acts of kindness make all the difference. That's when you know you got a good team. That's you know when you got a good culture.
So the great Chester Elton is graying, but as wise as ever. And I knew him when his hair was darker. But I must say that you have continued to build your wisdom, and it's helped an awful lot of people. Including us.
Yeah, thank you for being here today.
Chester hits the nail on the head immediately. He tells you exactly what you need to know and what you need to do.
Yeah.
His point about being happy and engaged at work is a benchmark in life. If you're not happy with what you're doing, what the hell are you doing there? Why would you go to work grumpy every single day and spend a third of your life or more in a place that you think is a hellhole? You have to like what you do, love what you do, like your surroundings, like your coworkers, love your customers, And all of a sudden, your productivity is going to double.
And here's the thing, like if you're a salesperson thinking like, well, I'm just involved in the culture that they've given to me. I don't create the culture. I would disagree with that. You're a part of the culture and you should take leadership and you should take some of those leadership skills and begin to create the culture around you that you want. You may be able to affect it, but haven't thought about trying.
I agree with that.
And if you're a manager, it is so important to create that culture. I mean, think about our culture and how it's evolved mm-hmm. over the last couple of years.
Love our culture.
Yeah, but you know, I would say we've really improved on the collaboration and the communication across teams, and I think that people no longer working in silos and in their own little bubble, but now
right,
everyone
they're kind of working together. But mm-hmm. let me throw this at you. Let's look at the criteria. Did we give anybody a test before they worked here?
Like,
no. Like
on
a
their
Rorschach
interview?
Test?
Or, no.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
They're all pretty much bullshit to me. I go human to human. What we did is we went the Microsoft principle plus one. We hired smart, self-starting people with a past history of success. That's the Microsoft way. We took it one step further. We hired smart, happy people with a that are self-starting and have a past history of success. And everyone here meets that criteria. It's amazing the quality of people that are on the Bigetimer team at this moment.
I also, when I look at someone to hire, one of the things I think about since we live so close to work is, can I trust them in our home? Because if I can trust them in our home, I can trust them with the keys to our office. I can trust them with all the projects they're going to need to do. And to me, that's a big factor.
They come into our home anyway.
I love that, though. And I also look at work ethic. I want to know, is someone going to be dedicated? What's their work ethic going to be? And I think if you bring like-minded people and like working people together where everyone's working hard and there's not like one slacker in the group, people enjoy that kind of atmosphere because they're like, wow, this guy's working hard next to me. I'm going to up my game and work just as hard.
So this conversation that we're having right now is really pertinent to us because we just added a new member to
Correct.
Our team. And so, you know, workplace culture questions come up, especially when places are growing. And I know a lot of sales teams out there are growing right now, expanding, adding new people. How do you maintain that culture even when you're adding new people?
Hold on. We onboard people before they ever onboard. If you notice that when anyone is hired in this company, they talk to everyone on the team. And the team gives us the feedback of like, this person can fit in the culture. So ostensibly, we have done half the onboarding. We may not have done the Gitomer, you know, what do you get and when do you get it and what do you do and how do you do it. But I want to know if this person is going to fit into our culture. Because if they're not, it's not going to be a good day.
Totally. And their onboarding experience, you know, is on day one.
They love it.
Their real day one is so important. Like this morning, I walked around our new employee. I showed him the bathroom. I showed him the kitchen. I showed him where the extra coffee is. I showed him where the mugs are. Like, to
I'm
me—
I'm not going
to
touch that, by the way. I'm leaving it alone.
No, but to me, it's like a new employee has just started. I'm welcoming them not just into our office, but into our family, our work family, and into our home. And I need to make sure they feel comfortable. It's like if someone comes to a dinner party at your house and they know no one, you're going to make sure that they're going to be able to talk to everybody.
I agree.
And make new friends.
I agree.
So we've been talking a lot about this from the management side, but how about the individual's contribution to workplace culture? I'll crib a little bit here from John F. Kennedy. Ask not what your culture can do for you, but what you can do for your culture. How much of a factor is that?
Well, why don't you guys tell us? You're in the culture.
Oh, me? You're saying me?
Yeah.
Oh.
The great Doug, the great man behind the microphone.
I think I think it matters a lot. I think each individual has to take it upon themselves to say, hey, I love the place that I work. I want to continue to see the culture do well. That's not only on management. That has to come from us as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do they respect you?
Yes.
Do they include you?
Sure.
Are you part of the decision-making process?
Absolutely.
On purpose.
Right.
On
of
purpose.
Course.
The
of
only
course.
This is not – people mistake – what this company is. It is not a team of people. It's a family. I'm a father of four daughters and a grandfather of four granddaughters, and I treat everybody like they're a member of the family.
Mm-hmm. He even calls me a daughter.
Yes.
That's how.
Well, that's only on the day you wear dresses.
Oh, boy. Rumors. Sword rumors. No, but yes, I agree that everyone is contributing to that culture. And I think that something we didn't say but we're hinting at is the transparency that we offer. Like, we want you guys to know what's going on. You know, that's why we have a weekly meeting where we talk about where we are in sales, where we are with operations, whatever it may be, whatever projects are going on. We want to be transparent about that. And I think that that contributes a lot, especially for salespeople who are remote. So like diehard, if you're in Kentucky and your corporate headquarters is in New York, you're going to feel somewhat removed from what's going on and somewhat, I know it, you feel sometimes left out, like you have no idea what the hell they're doing, excuse my language, but what they're doing in New York and what kind of decisions they're making and if they're really doing well or whatever. And so you need a manager and you need to work on a team that where you feel included connected. And you yeah. feel connected and engaged.
So a couple more things. I would, based on Chester's interview today, I would recommend that everybody go out and buy those miniature carrots and put little baskets of them on everybody's desk in the morning so they get why they're working there. And number two, I think that each of you diehard should sit down with your sales team or if you're a leader with your people and talk about the culture in your company and what can you do to make it a better culture. Because when you do, you will serve your customers better. You know the expression, happy wife, happy life?
I do.
Yes. So what you want to talk about is happy family, happy team, happy customers. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to answer the phone in a way that's reflective of what you felt during the day working in your environment. And that includes Death Wish Coffee.
It always has to include Death Wish Coffee.
So, we have the best of coming up on Friday, and it's going to be amazing this week because we have had an amazing week. And we have Motivation Monday coming up on Monday, and I've got some ideas that will floor the entire diehard world.
And if you're just listening to us for the first time and you've never joined our Facebook Live,
what the hell are you thinking?
We love you listening to the replay on the podcast network, but come join us on Facebook and become a part of the conversation. We want to connect with you. We want to engage with you. Join our Facebook group. It's free, and we like to hang out with you there.
And all of the lives show up there. So if you join the Facebook group, that's a great way.
Yeah.
It just instantly
you'll get notified.
Yeah,
so it's the seller.
You can socially process with one another. You can throw your questions out to the group. Yeah. We'll answer a few of them, but I guarantee you the group's got ideas too.
True, and it's the Sell or Die official group on Facebook. And who knows, maybe you'll make a new friend or a new employer or a new employee contact.
So when I was a little kid and I was watching the Cisco Kid with Duncan Ronaldo, they would ride off into the sunset and Cisco would say to Pancho, "Oh, Pancho," and Pancho would go, "Oh, Cisco," and they would ride off and go, "Hasta luego." So hasta luego, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Sell or Diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true Sell or Diehard, and we thank you.